Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
I'm your host, Sahaka Omana L. Bay, and this evening's broadcast is entitled, What's Behind Your Birth Certificate? We're going to try to do all this in one segment, but we may have to come back with part two. And what we want to do is answer the following questions here this evening. What is behind your birth bond? How much money is your birth bond worth? Is the birth certificate used to enslave you? How can we use the bond? Does the courts attempt to access the bond? What is the CUSIP number, the CUSIP number? We're going to deal with these this evening. Now, first of all, let me say that this evening we're offering free articles. And the way you get them is simply send me a blank email. Just say, Tahaka, send me them free articles you got. Send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. For those of you who are on your social sites, if you're on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever you may be, send me a friend request and I'll grant it, especially on Facebook, because that will give you access to my wall and the articles that we put there for your education. You're able to go right there and read them, and you'll be able to take your time and do that. Now, on August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, we will be hosting the Morris Summit. So make sure you make your way down here. We're going to be here for 3 days. We'll be right in the Wyndham Hotel, right on the St. John's River. So come on down, and so we get a chance to meet each other, okay? Now, I want to start off by, before we get into the bond, about something that has come to my attention. It's called the Common Law Grand Jury Validated by the U.S. Supreme Court. That happened Sunday, May the 26th, 2013. The U.S. Supreme Court validates people's right to establish common law grand jury. Now, what that means is, if you have the right to establish your own jurisdiction, your own grand jury, you are able to assemble these grand juries in the time that of a problem. Otherwise, people are hauled off to jail and drugged before a grand jury, and is being called a jury of your peers, but in a lot of cases you discover that it's not. So when we have a aboriginal and indigenous grand jury set up of our own, then we can bring our people before us, and that's a very, very important thing. I encourage you to Google the article, Common Law Grand Jury Validated. Now, I have that article, and I'm going to be posting it up on Facebook, and so you can actually read this thing for yourself. And it explains how they took the vote and what is the design to benefit. And you have to keep in mind this is a very, very powerful move for the people, because you are able now to sit in judgment on your people instead of having another court from the United States Corporation doing so. And that's very important, especially when you have situations like the Trayvon Martin situation and other problems that you're having with the court. And once you get this thing set up, and me and some brothers, we're working on this thing, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. So if you would like a copy of this article, go ahead and send me an email to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll include that in there so you can take a look at this thing. Very, very, very powerful move, and we need to get to work on this here right away. And we want to try to do this in each county across the country. It's being done, been done up already up in New York City. Them guys already rolling up there, and there's other places that they're rolling with this thing too. But now, let's get into the birth bond. Now, in order for you to, if you've got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand at area code 310-982-4184. To contact me directly, you call me at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'll get a chance to chat with you. Make sure you have your questions ready that you want to add, that you want to ask, okay? Because my time is short, very busy, so make sure that you know exactly what it is that you want to discuss. Be as brief as possible so we can get it in, get the solution, and see if we can help you out with that thing, okay? All right, now, let's get some familiarity with this birth bond, man. And y'all hold your hat a minute there.
All right, Rod, maybe you should sort of like just summarize what you said Friday so that those that may not have been on the Friday call, I mean, when you say what you were talking about Friday, what was basically just kind of just a quick summary, what was it that you were talking about?
Okay, last Friday, we got talking about the birth certificate. There's been a lot of rumors, a lot of hearsay, very little proof. A lot of people, they want to talk it, but nobody's able to produce any black ink on white paper. I had a gentleman on there last week that he came on, and he sat here and explained that his birth certificate was worth over $1.3 billion. That's what it was worth. Because they pulled the information, they pulled the QCIP number, they ran it. So we are sitting on some information. I've had a gentleman that called me here today and sat down and said he pulled his birth certificate, and his birth certificate is worth over $750 million. Ladies and gentlemen, what we have been sitting here talking about over the last several years and here in the last year or so on the bankruptcy of the United States, we've never been able to prove that the birth certificate had any value. We always heard. We've never been able to prove it. I've had several people that has proven that the birth certificate has a dollar amount. I seen one. I'm going to see another one here in the next couple of days.
These are forensic reports.
Yes, these are forensic reports. These are financial statements. Now, what is happening here, ladies and gentlemen, is this. Now, a lot of people will sit back and say, Rod, the judge has done his job right. He committed no crime on the bench. The prosecutor, they done their job right. They committed no crime. The fact that your lawyer sold you out, he committed no crime. All this was because you're ignorant, you didn't understand, you didn't have the knowledge at the time that you was born to be able to come in and fix this. And my attitude is kiss my butt. That's wrong. The bottom line is what we have been able to see is that any time they drag us into these courts, they're tapping into that birth certificate, and they're pulling money out, and they're using it for the bond, and they are securitizing off of it. The problem of it is you and I, at this point in time, are not able to get into this. They are, but we can't. Now, let me tell you why we can't. Part of it goes back into our immaturity. stop and think here for a minute what I'm going to sit back and tell all of you. If you had access, let's sit here and say just to $200 million. If you had access to $200 million at your fingertips, how many of you would work? How many of you would still drive semi-truck, still haul fuel, bring groceries, work the farm, build the homes? How many of you would still be medical doctors and work in hospitals and help people? Ladies and gentlemen, we'd be back to the Stone Age. That's just why this is so hard to get a hands on. The problem of it is the court system and the lawyers on this side of this, they've learned to tap into this and fill their pockets at our expense. And they sit back and say it's our ignorance that justifies it, and it makes it legal for them to go back and do this. The thing of it is, the bottom line really comes down to this. This violates antitrust laws, because if that birth certificate, and we've been able to prove it, like I said, I had one gentleman on there, we have it verified over $1 billion. Over $1 billion. Now, how does it get to be this high? Go back in and understand the bankruptcy of 1933. They did the bankruptcy of 1933 under the Alien Registration Act. You had to have a birth certificate. On that birth certificate, it had to have a footprint or a print. On that, they also gave you a Social Security number. That Social Security number and that birth certificate set up the trust. That Social Security number was your bank account number for the Federal Reserve Bank. Because remember, we had 12 Federal Reserve Banks in this country. That birth certificate has a dollar value. Do I know how to get into it? No, not right now. I don't. And I'm being honest with you. I don't know how. I'm getting into this. I never got into trust law. I have been working on procedurals and administrative and statutory side. I've been trying to do what we've been doing here. I'm starting to learn trust law. I'm starting to try to get an understanding. But still, ladies and gentlemen, it goes in. As what I've always said here and said, whatever they're doing to us, we have to be able to go back in and show their statutes, their codes, their procedure. You didn't do your job right. I didn't have to do mine when you're not doing yours. With the amount of money, and we brought this up last week on this one particular case. I'm not sitting down saying which one we're dealing with because I got several different cases. But we've been able to go back in. A gentleman sat here and showed me on a felony charge, for a quarter. Now, a quarter is 3 months out of a year. Because this thing goes quarterly. They get $4 million for what we found in one particular case. Now, a traffic case, for a traffic ticket, they get roughly $1 million. There's different price range here of what they're pulling and what they're doing here. But in one case, per charge, per quarter, was $4 million. Now, there's four quarters in a year. Four times four is what? 16. If you get 6 charges, 10 charges, 20 charges, 47 charges, 50 charges, do the math. That's what they are making off of your court case. This is before they bond it and take it to a stockbroker and they put it on the stock market and they securitize. Now, all this comes out of the birth certificate to start with, and then they start securitizing, and then that's profit. It's like you having $500 and you invest it in the stock market. As it rolls over, you keep increasing. You don't take more money out of your pocket to make it go. Your $500 is your initial investment. $4 million is initial investment every quarter. This goes back to that CRIS report that we got pulled up here some time ago. It goes back and shows the millions and millions of dollars that they're pulling off this thing and how they keep rotating the same cases over and over per quarter.
Well, Rod, quick question. The money you're talking about that they generate, this money is being charged against the defendant. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
What this does, this goes into that second set of books for the CAFR account.
CAFR, C-A-F-R, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
Yes, this is a second set of books. It's like Al Capone. He had one set of books for taxes and had another set of books for profit. This is the same setup. They're using your public office EIN number, which is Employee Identification Number, or TIN, Tax Identification Number, for that public office. They're using that tax number to rate the ability to invest, but when that money comes in, it doesn't go back into that account. It goes into a separate account. That goes in right into tax fraud. Now, they're coming back in with the attitude, this is justifiable because we're ignorant and because we don't know how and because they've never sit down and told us how, because we didn't go back and claim it, that's our ignorance and our fault. Well, no, it's not. That's fraud. And these people pretty much have the attitude that when they hear and embezzle all this and they go back in and they create this income into a private account, that because of our ignorance, they're entitled to it, and that's our fault. That money is supposed to go back in and pay the public debt off. That's a fact. Now, I'm not real sure how yet, and I think maybe tonight with us being on the air the way we are, and I know we got listeners on here, I know we got FBI, and I know we got CIA and Homeland Security and IRS people and probably a bunch of alphabet people sitting on here. But we're broadcasting this tonight. I may not know all the ins and outs on this thing yet, but I do know it exists, and we have seen some proof of it that it does exist. These judges and lawyers, whether you are a DA or a lawyer that is selling your client out, these people need to go to jail.
Rod?
What?
A real quick note on the CAFR account, and Harvey, thank you for giving us information on what CAFR stands for, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Also, that goes to the GFOA that was also set up by a group of people in 1946, and that goes back into the mob. And they're the ones who showed them how to set up the federal government as corporations. So it is, it's all very relevant. It's all mob-oriented. And it's not a matter of our ignorance, Rod. They're embezzling our money. It's theft. I mean, the whole thing is fraud. Ignorance has nothing to do with it unless they were intentionally keeping us ignorant. Ignorance has absolutely nothing to do with it. But the CAFR account and GFOA, and if anybody knows anything about Walter Burian, if you go to his website, CAFR1.com, and it'll tell you all about GFOA and the CAFR. If you want some heavy-duty reading material, what Rod is telling you about, go to that website. You'll get a lot more background on what Rod is telling you. Thanks.
Yep, thanks. But the thing of it is, ladies and gentlemen, with what is transpiring, and I've contacted more and more people, other little groups are getting some of this information out, but until I actually have a good footing on it and actually know how it works, it's like everything else. I will sit back and just do the studying, but the fact that I have seen proof of the dollar amount on birth certificates, that this is not alleged, this is dollar amount. Like I had a gentleman on there last Friday. I talked to a gentleman here today. Him and I are going to get together this week. I've tried to make contact with another gentleman that can sit down and who wants to remain anonymous. I want to sit down and see what I can do working with him on what we could do to go get some of this information. Because, ladies and gentlemen, when we can start going into these courts and start addressing this issue, and I was given information here tonight, and Mike Golden had it on his show, from what I understand, but I had a lady tell me here last night, is that every single state has a financial report for a judge. If you walk into a courtroom and you have your state financial report and you hand it to that judge, we want to know what your finances are. If you're going to try me, I need to know what your finances are. And start dumping these in these courts. Ladies and gentlemen, for you new people on here, we're not about overthrowing. We're not about trying to take over. We're trying to correct the problem. We're not anti-government. We are the government. The problem of it is when we can turn around and we can find out, and we see documents where on this one court case alone, now think about what I'm saying. I'm not saying 100 cases, 1,000 cases. I'm saying one single court case, one individual, in a two-year period of time, they made in the neighborhood of $6 billion, $6 billion in one case. There's no excuse for these schools to sit here and have to shut down because there's no money.
There's no excuse for us paying taxes either, is there?
No excuse for us paying taxes. There is absolutely no excuse for us to sit down and have homeless people.
Okay, Moses. Hold on. Now, that's very, very interesting.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem El of the Tamarain 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiana Amael, Professor Asif Dean Ham El, Tahaka Amana El, Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah El, and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Morris Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
One more time, Mo, don't forget, for those of you who are trying to do your estate, now, inside the archives, you have your estate manual, you have your estate letter, and you have all the other supporting documents. And for those of you who want to get out there and place that thing in the hands of your employee to stop it from taking taxes out your check, go right to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, look around. If you click on the letters under the picture, a little drop-down menu will come back and give you a little additional information on that. But before you do anything, call me, Tahaka Amana El Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, for those of you who want to set up your will, all that information is in there as well, right there in the Talkers Master Library. Don't forget, www.newfreehelpgroup.com, okay? All right.
this belief structure is perpetuated by maritime admiralty law. This form of law was originally created to govern ships docking in foreign nations for the import or export of products and resources. It deals with banking and merchant affairs, not civil affairs. When a product is taken off of a ship and brought into a foreign land, that nation takes custody of the resource and accounts for it with a certificate. That certificate marks the birth date of that product in the custody of the respective nation. Think of why it is supposedly required to have a certificate of live birth in the first place. The Barron's Dictionary of Banking Terms defines a certificate as a paper establishing an ownership claim. So right there, we notice that everyone with a birth certificate is defined as being owned. People are used as collateral with other nations because the U.S. is bankrupt. The United States declared bankruptcy on March 9th of 1933. At this point, the U.S. began taking out loans from a private, non-government affiliated corporation called the Federal Reserve. With no money to pay back the loans, the United States began using the citizens as collateral. All birth and marriage certificates are literally warehouse receipts. Just look at the similarities of warehouse receipts and birth certificates. Both document the date of issue, a serial number, registration number or receipt number, a description of the product, and an authorized informant to notify the appropriate government agency. With all of this information being readily available, the majority of people are unaware of their involvement with maritime admiralty law. This is possible through the manipulation of language. This admiralty law changed the meaning of the word person from a natural living person to a corporation. Driver's licenses, vehicle registrations, auto insurance forms, building permits, gun permits, work permits, tax filing documents, birth and death certificates, traffic citations, and many other forms of documentation that were once believed to be absolutely necessary only apply to persons or corporations. Upon signing such a legal document, you are indirectly waiving your rights under the Constitution and lowering your status to that of a corporation that is created with the same exact name as you. The only way to reconcile your true name from the name of the corporation is to take notice that the corporation has its name in all capital letters. This is known as capitis diminutia maxima. You may take notice that your driver's license, birth certificate, social security card, insurance cards, and more use all capital letters to legally represent the corporation with your name, not you. The corporation is known as an artificial person, whereas you, the human being, are known as a natural person. This deception goes even deeper when it comes to the courts that we attend. When showing up the court, you will notice that there are seats for witnesses behind a wooden fence or barrier. The defendant must cross through the entrance to the other side of the barrier where the plaintiff and judge sit. This act symbolizes the boarding of a ship. At this time, business can be conducted in maritime admiralty law. The judge, acting as captain or banker, is responsible for settling the balance between the two sides. This is why there is always a monetary value involved in any court case. The captain is simply dealing with banking and merchant disputes. Once the balance is paid, the case is closed. To turn the court case away from admiralty law where your rights are not protected, you must avoid agreeing to represent the artificial person. This is done by stating that you are the natural person. You don't have a first or last name because those imply corporate title. In a court case, you may state that the court takes judicial notice of your honor's oath of office. Every judge must take an oath of office to practice law. Yet you must make it clear to the court and the jury that the judge is acting as judge and not banker. Remember that you are a natural human being of the earth. You are not governed by anything but your own consciousness. Laws are created within a society. The society that created the laws we see being enforced today is called the Law Society. Yet the most beautiful part of this entire deception is the fact that we are not part of the Law Society, so their laws do not apply to us.
judges, lawyers, and law enforcement officers, they're all part of a society. Within that society, they've created their own language that's deceptively similar to English. They have these little things called statutes, acts, and regulations that seem like laws, but they really only apply to those within their society. So that basically means all the traffic violations, minimum age requirements, and everything except for damage to another person or their property doesn't really apply to the natural person.
Laws only apply to those within the law society. The game being played is an illusion. You can simply choose to open your eyes and reclaim the freedom that you were born with, bound by nothing but the limits of your imagination. These are just a few examples of assuring that your rights are being protected. By far, the most important line of defense against this deception is to be aware of the perversion of language, and be absolutely aware of how you form your beliefs and concepts. All forms of the perversion of language, there is a mirror reflection of this in the microcosm of the psyche.
And the problem I see with humanity today is we don't truly know ourselves anymore. We have the 9-to-5 job, we have the house, the children, the bills, the television, the hobbies, and the errands that we run every single day, and we eventually begin to believe that this is who we are. You know, but who are we beneath the job title, beneath the status of mother or father, theist or atheist, Republican or Democrat, black or white, man or woman? Who are we? Who are we deep down inside? We don't know, because every time we hear an answer that we don't want to accept about ourselves, we deny it. We'll pass it off and project it onto somebody else and judge them for it. This is repression. And we see what repression is do to us on an individual level, but what about on a collective level of humanity? What happens when the whole world refuses to see what they truly are on the inside?
All right, Moors, we're back. If we have any questions at this point, in regards to your birth certificate, if you have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and we will see if we can get these things answered for you. One more time, we're going to be, we're going to be dealing with some realistic economics here. We're going to be dealing with the Fed, and your birth bond does have a dollar amount behind it, but now there are many different ways that you can deal with that. You can use that in certain court cases and stuff when you're trying to get some things done. Hold on 1 second, Morris. Area code 404.
Islam.
Islamo, let me have it.
Yes, my question is, well, are you familiar with the actual understanding that the bond is really an estate, or it's a way to actually control the estate from a legal process? Of basically, the name in all capital letters right now in the present status of those who are not nationals would be basically that the person is subjected to the straw man if you give up, you know, jurisdiction. But the, you know, the best way to really look at the birth certificate is to really turn it into an estate according to the state law and control that estate. And then, you know, I you know, a lot of brothers speak about the dollar amount that's attached to it. You know, honestly, I haven't, you know, seen anyone to actually demonstrate that they can actually seize the funds in that particular way. I offer people the understanding to look at it more like you can control the estate that should have good credit, and if you know how to manage credit in the United States, you pretty much can have anything that you want. If you, it's about good time and patience and just being able to control or manage the debt that you're going to produce. And so, you know, that's pretty much my measure. That's my measure right there, Islam.
Well, where did you get this information from?
Well, I mean, it's what I'm doing. It's not a theory. I'm actually, you know, doing that. And, you know, we can build in private as far as the correct way to do that. And, you know, what I'm saying is the name in all capital letters that they use to attack you, and you end up giving them jurisdiction without not having the right knowledge to stand on your square. But what I'm saying is if you turn that estate or that name in all capital letters into an estate and defend it as such, there will be, I mean, you're going to have to do it a couple of times and put them on record. But once they know that that name is a particular estate and you start moving as such, there's no need to attack the estate for the benefit for them to put you in jail in the so-called, because, you know, they call it a benefit. You going to jail, signing for probation, or being subjected to the, whatever consequence that they throw at you is known as a benefit. But if you turn that name into an estate, they're going to defend you. I'm having good results. And the system, if you want to call it that, the governor, the police of that particular state, they protect the states. But if you're not moving with that name as an estate, you won't have any you won't have any positive results. The positive results come in once you start moving as an estate. Move that name is being moved as an estate. Of course, we in our private capacity are nationals. And the only thing that they see as far as I am concerned is an estate. And my estate is situated in a foreign jurisdiction under the profit, and basically protected under the profit, under the treaty, because I'm enforcing the treaty also. But that's a whole nother, you know. But I really just wanted to share as far as
what treaty are you enforcing?
I'm enforcing I'm enforcing the treaty of peace and friendship. One of the oldest treaties that's still on the books.
Okay. Well, certainly appreciate you bringing us that information, brother. You have anything else to add?
Well, I'm going to send you a message on Facebook so you can have my contact information, because, like I said, the process is in theory. What I want to share with the people is, don't fight this birth certificate. You should get the information that empowers you to let it be a tool for you, because they did give us the birth certificate for a reason. And, you know, they didn't teach us all the things that nationals can do with it, but it is it's really a good tool once you, you know, study the knowledge that will empower you. And that's really where our key is when dealing with the birth certificate. That once you turn it into an estate and move as such, defend your estate, they're going to pretty much give you everything you need. They're not, like, what I'm saying is I'm not getting any bad resistance from the state. Pretty much when I did the process, it's legal. It's coming from the actual state code. Not that as Moors we are limited to the state code. It's just that I'm using the state code to turn that name into the highest officer in their jurisdiction. Right now, everybody is a corporate person, artificial person. Okay. The name in all capital letters is a corporation. But if you turn that corporation into the highest position, which is an estate, then you have no trouble. Because the estate doesn't have bodies to come to trade in, like how they do the straw man. When people come in as a straw man, you put yourself on a platter to get devoured, and they're going to eat you every time. But if you're moving as an estate, there's nothing to talk about. But I'm representing as the executor of this estate, enforcing the treaty. There's nothing to really talk about, but you have to have that particular legal language ready to submit to them to let them know that you are, that name is an estate, And there's no need that, you know, there's, and you're really talking at a higher level of law once you deal with that estate being an estate and not a corporate person, straw man, subject to that jurisdiction. Islam.
Okay.
That's pretty much.
Yeah, okay. Well, I certainly appreciate you for giving us a breakdown on that, brother. And I'm going on to another 404 area code. 404.
Yes, sir. That's you, the man. I wanted to get that dude number. You know what I'm saying? And can is it okay? I get that dude number.
Hold on a minute, man. Brother 404, are you still there?
Yes.
Can you mind giving out your number?
Yeah, he can get it. I don't mind. It's 404.
Uh-huh.
421-7298. This is the brother. You probably, if you on Facebook, it's ADAP Fez on the Facebook. But I'm sending you the host of the show. I'm sending you information too. I'm sending you my name also and my email address.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any more questions, brother?
Okay, I got one question. Okay. When you discharge or cancel the mortgage contract or car note contract after the 6 months, whatever, would that affect your credit? Once you do that, would that go on your credit or you still have good credit?
No, that's not going to affect your credit.
Oh, okay. Appreciate that.
All right. Okay, Moores, let's deal with another side of this thing, this birth certificate thing. And keep in mind, the brother did mention about an estate, and what we do is we show you how to set up the estate. Your manual is there. Your estate letters are there. All supporting documentation to get that estate set up and how to use it and what to do with it is all there in Talker's Archives, okay? So y'all hold your hat for 1 second. Let's take a look at this thing here.
Have you ever wondered why it is necessary to have a birth certificate in this country and many other countries like Canada and the United States? When you were born, an event was registered onto a piece of paper, which your parent or parents signed with your name on it and signature of the doctor. That is known as a live birth record. Out of that document, the government of Canada has created a birth certificate with your name on it in all uppercase letters. They extracted it from the live birth certificate. On the birth certificate, it shows on the front your name, the day you were born, the place you were born, the date of creation of the birth certificate, the date it was issued to you, which is usually the age of 5 because of school, certificate number, gender, registration number, the province, government stamp with words written underneath, certificate extract from registration. On the back, it says province, alphanumerical digits in red color. Some say it's a bond number on the stock market and it's worth money. Others say it's the number which represents our obligations to pay debt. First time births were recorded was in England in the year 1837. In North America, recording birth events and registering birth certificates did not happen until 1915 in the U.S., and shortly after 1933, it became a known practice in Canada and the U.S. So before 1933, which was only 79 years ago, there was no such thing as a birth certificate in Canada. To fully understand the agenda of the birth certificates, we have to take a look at what was happening in the United States. The agenda behind birth certificates had three motives, which was put into action specifically by puppet U.S. President Woodrow Wilson and Edward Mandel House and the people that pulled their strings. The three motives are, number one, to keep record of all human beings living on the landmass of Canada and the United States. Number two, national debt. President Woodrow Wilson is the one who enacted the Federal Reserve Act, giving the Federal Reserve Bank power to create the United States currency. This is money being created for the U.S. out of thin air with compounded interest attached, lent to the citizens, is what put the U.S. economy into an engineered debt, which was designed so that it could never be repaid. This is a private corporation, guys. This is not a government corporation in the States. Because this debt is perpetually growing by the minute, the government has put its citizens as collateral to these bankers, and the birth certificate played a role in this. In Canada, it's the same thing. Our national debt stands at a whopping $590 billion and counting because the Bank of Canada is not being used properly. Like, Canada's federal debt grew steadily between 5% and 10% per year until 1975, when it began to explode, growing for the next 12 years at more than 20% per year. It broke the $100 billion mark in 1981 and the $200 billion mark in 1985. If the Bank of Canada didn't contract its work out to foreign corporations, our debt would not be nowhere as near as high as it is right now. This has happened because the Bank of Canada, like I said, has contracted its work to print our money to companies like BA International, who create money out of thin air and lend it to us, which eventually we have to pay back with compounded interest attached. That's not regular interest, that's compounded interest. The debt can mathematically never be paid back by the way this system of money creation is designed. The red numbers and letters on the back is said to represent our pledge to pay back the debt, and that money generated has been rumored that it goes into the Consolidated Revenue Fund. For more information on the Bank of Canada, please refer to our previous articles on CanadianAwareness.org. Go to the search bar, type in Bank of Canada. And also check the description of this video for a link. The third motive is the creation of the legal fiction. Governments cannot control free will human beings. In order to control the humans have to first give up some type of consent to give power to these governments. They know people do not give up their rights and freedoms willingly. Have you ever wondered why your name is all in capital letters when you get mail sent to you from banks, governments, and when you get the bills? The government created a fictional entity for you to use in the system. It is basically a corporation, all capital letters. This is known as the legal name in legal terms. The name in all capital letters is not you. So from the original document that your parents signed creates the birth certificate that we carry in our pocket. And also creates our Canadian citizenship. From that tiny birth certificate that we carry in our pockets, it's also used to create other forms of identification, such as health cards, SIN cards, and driver's licenses. And we'll touch down on SINs and driver's licenses in a bit. Without the birth certificate, those other things couldn't exist in the realm of the government Canada's rules and regulations. People are swayed to believe that they are these pieces of plastic and paper. To me, this is outrageously silly. The government has manipulated generations of people, convincing them that they are the birth certificate and they are the plastic identification. In factual truth, the birth certificate and other identifications are nothing more than legal fictions. That's right. Created by the government. When people represent their identification, they are representing the fiction the government created, and this fiction is bound by government rules, restrictions, and taxation. So when Parliament makes laws, and when one reads those laws, which are known as statutes and acts, and when it refers to those that are bound by it, it refers to them as persons or subjects. Well, there are regular definitions and legal definitions of words, and when it comes to Canadian law, all definitions are defined by the legal dictionaries. When it comes to legal definitions, there are two types of persons. One, legal person, and two, natural person. The legal person, or legal name, is the identification, the fictional entity, and the natural person is the human being, conscious and divine, free thinking. So let's look at some legal definitions. Legal name. is the name that an individual is given at birth and or recognized by a government or other legal entity, or which appears on birth certificate, marriage certificate, or other government-issued document. Legal person. A legal person, in brackets, also artificial person, body corporate, also commonly called a vehicle, please take note of that, has a legal name and has rights, protections, privileges, responsibilities, and liabilities under law. They're not specific as to what law, but it's liabilities under statutory law. Take note of the words artificial, corporate, and vehicle. It is not a real living thing. It is a fiction. It is a name that is used as a vehicle in their system. Natural person. Natural person is a real human being, as opposed to legal person, which may be a corporation or state. Yes. That is the legal definition of natural person. So to be clear, you are a natural person, and your identification is the legal person. The citizens do not own this small piece of paper, the birth certificate. The government owns it, and hence why it is stamped. Let's recap the three reasons why birth certificates exist. It is to keep statistics and records of all humans' births information, make us collateral to the banks that lend the country the money and use our hard-earned money to pay back the debt, and create the legal fiction and fool us to believe we are the legal fiction so that we become bound by statutes, acts, and taxation.
Soon, every American will be required to register their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of the people. We can compel the people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer not being able to work and earn a living. They will be our chattel. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value.
Yeah, so let's take a look at the similarities between warehouse receipts and birth certificates. Both document the date of issue, serial number or certificate number, registration numbers, a description of the product or names, and a signature of an authorized informative to notify the proper government agency, which is the Registrar General, Judith M. Hartman, for the birth certificate. The reason why I'm showing you this, because I want to say, I think it's pretty fair to say that the government of Canada and the big bankers look at us like commercial products. You clearly saw in the quote of Edward, he said we'll be given a commercial value, and you know, they look at us as citizens as a way to extort on a massive scale. Enslave and make huge profits off the fruits of our labor and from the entire financial economy. Just take a look at the Vital Statistics Act, Section 1, in Canada. Birth means the complete expulsion or extraction from its mother, irrespective of the duration of pregnancy, of a product of conception. I just want to touch down on the SIN card right quick. It was created after the Depression, like the birth certificate. The SIN card is extracted from the birth certificate and, in fact, makes you an employee of the federal government. Yeah, the government of Canada is nothing more than a corporation that has corporate policies that are enforced upon their employees. By you having a SIN card is, in factual truth, making you an agent of the government. If you are not an agent of the corporation known as the government of Canada, you don't have to follow the rules and regulations. Because most of the rules involve taking our money, and they convert our rights into privileges, and they also convert our rights into crimes. We will get into that a bit later. But let me put it this way. Walmart has corporate policies, and it's a corporation. It has rules and regulations for its employees, correct? Yeah. So if someone from Walmart came up to you in the street and said, hey, you're not allowed to wear sandals, and you ask them, why not? And they would, if they replied, because Walmart policy says so. Well, heck, I'm pretty sure you'd laugh at them and be like, man, I'm not in Walmart. I don't work for Walmart, so buzz off, right? It's the same thing with these, you know, rules and regulations the government's making. They tricked us into being, using the sin, which actually enforces the rules and regulations. So why do you think cops always ask for ID? It is so they can find a legal person, the legal name to enforce the policies of the government of Canada. Like I said, it's the legal fiction they created. Police used to be called peace officers. Now they are called police officers, policy officers. Your driver's license is also extracted from the birth certificate. We will examine the driver's license in a few minutes. And that is how we are enslaved and deceived by the birth certificate.
Okay, area code 512. 512, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, come on, Lisa.
My question, as it relates to all of the birth certificates having the names in all caps, identify them as a corporation, I have a birth certificate where the names aren't in all caps. What is that? What's mm-hmm. the significance of that?
Yes, it's the same thing. You discover that when they first create these birth certificates, I was born in 53. Mine has my name in upper and lowercase letters, but it is still the same cycle. They just went ahead and changed it later and started making them with all capital letters, and then they start removing certain things from them to keep you locked in. But it is still the it's still the same thing. It doesn't really matter. If you have one, that's what they are keeping track of you with, and that's what they are extracting and creating a lot of the other documentations from and making it legal and binding, because just like the guy said, they are using you as their property.
Okay, well, I guess I'm trying to be clear on, because, this is new information to me, and before I pass this information on to, my children and all of my constituents, I want to be able to pass the right information. And in what I'm hearing, there was a large emphasis put on the fact that your birth certificate, the name was in all caps. Again, I'm looking at two birth certificates, one mine and one was my husband's, and his birthday is, 3 months away from mine. And my certificate is all caps, but his is not. I can understand if there's a disparity between a number of years, but our births were a couple of months apart. So if I'm going to say, tell people, look at this number on your certificate, look at the fact that it is all caps, that's one of the indicators, just like I'm doing now, I need to be able to explain to people if they come to me saying, well, mine isn't all caps, so, what is this about?
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, if you can just remember one thing, it doesn't really matter whether it's in all caps or not. It's the certificate itself. That's the shackle itself. All your bills that come to your home, ma'am, even though your birth certificate is upper lowercase letters, but all the bills that come to your home is in all capital letters. Is that correct?
My social is, my mm-hmm. driver's license is, I can't verify all of my bills because I haven't been consciously aware of that. But I will say I did look up the first three numbers of my birth certificate and my mom's, who's deceased now, on fidelity.com under there, where you go and research for quotes, and those ticker mm-hmm. symbols do register there. I don't know what that means, but my mom's, hers registered at a higher rate than mine was, which was interesting because she's deceased.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I guess I need more information on what those first three numbers represent.
Well, the fact that she is deceased, that doesn't mean that they're going to stop extracting revenue and trading the bond. You see, the bond is being traded all over the world. All different countries and stuff have that bond. These banks are actually still using her bond, even though she's passed.
So who does the bond belong to?
Well, the bond belongs to the person that created it, but anytime somebody creates something and put your name on it, then that gives you the right to question what they've done or extract some revenue from what they have done in your name. Otherwise, they allow.
Would I be able to extract revenue from my mom? I mean, how do I justify or how do I right that wrong? My mother's deceased, my grandmother's deceased, and there's an entity out there extracting revenue on their, you know, behalf. What are we to do with this information that you're giving us besides go to the website and pay, you know, all that? I need something practical here.
What you're gonna have to do is it's not quite as easy as you think it is. You're going to have to learn a few things. You're going to have to learn how to craft some documentation. You're going to have to learn where to put them at. And to give you all the ins and outs right here on this little two-hour broadcast, I can't do that. So what I do is I refer people to my archives where all of this information is placed there. When you call me, I direct you to what you need to start doing and what documents you need to be filling out to get this information and also to read certain information that will give you a bigger explanation and explain it all to you. And there's also
I did go to your archives, and in the archives it's got four different areas of content or information. You pay a fee, and then I guess
nobody pays anything. You donate to the archives. Once you do that, you contact us, and we walk you toward what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Okay. It just said $250. It didn't say donation, so that wasn't clear.
No, clearly says donation. If you look right there on the donation, if you click on the disclaimer, the whole thing pops up and clearly shows you. If you click on the words up under the photograph, mm-hmm. You click on the words, it'll tell you the same thing.
Okay.
You have another question?
Okay. I'm just, you know, I support truth. I really do, and I'm an advocate as far as researching and really digging out the holes, and I look at everything. So I just, you know, I'm not attacking. I'm just trying to get to the truth. I'm trying to get to the bottom line, and if it takes work to get there, then fine. But, I see donate, but I also clicked on where it says eliminate all contracts, and it pulled up $250, and when I went to check out, it checked out as that much. Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you. I'll continue to listen.
All right. Thank you for calling in, sis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll go on to the take a little quick break, and when we come back, we'll be ready to go into the
truth.
Mm-hmm. it's important to understand what a CUSIP number is. A CUSIP number was created by the banking industry, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. I'm not even sure when. And it's a number that's registered with the Security Exchange Commission. It's everything today is numbered. You know, the scriptures talk about, you know, the fall of man. One of the things that will happen is everything gets numbered. Well, everything in banking is numbered. Well, those numbers, the CUSIP number, is designed to apply to things like instruments and notes and that sort of thing. Well, when you have a document that is going to be transferred or used as security or converted to a bond, all of that sort of thing, you need to be able to catalog it and index it. Hence the concept of the CUSIP number. So that's just what the banking industry came up with. They could have called it anything they wanted. They decided to call it the CUSIP number. The CUSIP number gets applied for by somebody through some kind of banking department. It's the Association of Banking, blah, blah, blah. There's all kinds of different entities involved. So you have a document that you want to sell or trade or bond or use as collateral, and you're a bank, so you just punch in the computer, blah, blah, blah. You get a number for it. Now that number can be traded. It's the same thing that Keating talks about on prisoner bonds, and other people talk about when they talk about Security Exchange Commission items for buying and selling. So we know what the CUSIP number is. If you talk to somebody that, say, sells securities or has a Series 7 license, or does some kind of stock and financial trading, they're very familiar with them. What we don't know is what it wouldn't apply to, because it really wouldn't apply to anything else. But what if we're wrong on this concept? And I think now that we're wrong on it completely. So let me elaborate on that concept. Here's how it all started. It started Thursday night. I went to the Legal Research Society. It's a group that's been around for a long time, probably 20 or so years now. And it's a bunch of legal researchers that have been doing it forever. They meet once a week here in Phoenix, and they just go over stuff, all kinds of stuff. They've written excellent court cases. They helped get rid of photo radar. They're kind of the unsung heroes in different parts of this movement. And most people are not familiar with them at all. I decided to go. Well, so it was kind of nice because I hadn't seen some of the people in a while, so we all say hello and blah, blah, blah. And there's not a topic there. We go over a million things. Towards the end there, and we're kind of wrapping it up and going back to the friendly exchange of the lows, Terry, the guy that leads the group, and he's been leading it for years and years, and he's a good friend, said, "I got to tell you something about what happened because it's just really strange, and, you know, there's something to this, and I don't know what it is." But a friend of his went down to the bank with a credit card, and he had 25 grand left on the credit card and took it as cash. The bank says, "All right, here's 25 grand in cash." The guy went out and bought some stuff that he needed, probably knowing that he couldn't pay it back, and figured, you know, what are they going to do? So anyways, the bank comes after him for it. The whole thing takes obviously months, and he's kind of back on his feet and doesn't want to destroy his credit. So, but he cannot pay back the credit card. It's too much. So he gets a lawyer to fight it. Lawyer looks at the case. They go through some things. Lawyer says, "Whoop, there's no way to win this. You went to the bank, got the money. They can prove it. So you're going to lose." So the guy's like, "Whoop, well, don't want to pay a lawyer and have to pay back 25 grand. Gets rid of the lawyer. And just for shits and grins, just wants to give it a try. Ask them for the CUSIP number on the application. Now, not knowing that this is going to be an issue, just is trying to screw with them. Nobody really came up with the concept of the application itself is being negotiated. So he sends them that. Now, this is an actual court case, and he does his RFAs asking for the CUSIP number. The bank dismissed the case. They get the document. A couple days later, they dismiss the case. That's it. It's over with. They don't want the $25,000 back. They don't want to talk to him. They don't want anything to do with this. So he's kind of like, oh, wow. So he tells Terry, and Terry goes, I'll try it, because Terry's in a credit card case. So Terry had done a QWR to get some information from the bank, and they were non-responsive, sent him back kind of a ridiculous letter of, here's this and that, and you can't ask for this and that. And he responds by saying, listen, you were completely non-responsive. You have to give me this information. And here, I'm adding this to it. I want the CUSIP number for the application. Now, Terry's case has been going on for a couple of years and fighting back and forth with the bank over this thing. So, okay, so anyways, the next letter Terry gets back from the bank is that they can't find the application, so the case is stopped. Now, they didn't dismiss it yet, but they put a hold on his case, the case where they were suing him, and all he did was, just like his friend did, was ask for the CUSIP number for the application. Now, this was just on Thursday night that I heard this. And then I had guests all day yesterday and yesterday evening. And Thursday night when I got home, I immediately sent out an email on it. Then Friday I was just booked with doing some documents, so I haven't been able to study this. But there's something very, somebody's asking what a QWR is. A QWR is a qualified written request. Under Title 15, which is 15 U.S.C. Section 1692, that's 15 U.S.C. Section 1692, talks about verification of debt. It's a very important title to be very familiar with anytime you're dealing with credit card companies or loans or anything, any type of debt-related stuff. So this seems to be a very, very big deal. Now, I'm going to continue that on no basis of knowledge. Understand, I haven't verified this. This is totally guesswork, and it's all theory. I haven't proved anything, but I'm going to discuss the theory because all of a sudden, about a million things that didn't make sense make sense. One of the things that makes sense is when you look at corporations, you look at a CEO making millions of dollars, and for some reason, the CFO, the chief financial officer, who's nothing more than a glorified accountant, he makes as much, sometimes more, than the CFO. So why is an accountant so important to a corporation? Didn't used to be that important of a position. Somebody once told me a long time ago, the reason the CFOs are so important is because they know how to actually... Oh, somebody's asking what an RFA is, request for admissions. It's in a court procedure that you send to the other party. You send them questions, and you ask them to admit or deny. It's a request for admissions. All this stuff is standard legal jargon. So the importance of the CFR is certain people know certain things on how to deal with the government and the banks in a different way than your average accountant does. And that's why they're so important. They have the proper licensing and the connections to pass through documents through the government entities that most people don't know, don't understand, even accountants. And most accountants will tell you this is all bullshit. But it's not. It's very real. One of the people that I consider being fortunate to have met, we didn't develop a friendship or anything. I just did some work for the guy. was a guy named Mr. Nguyen, who was the CFO for Quest, one of the largest telephone companies in the world, actually. They came from a company called US West, which came out of a diversification of Ma Bell 30 years ago. Well, he left Quest. When he retired, he got all of his pay for like a decade and $125 million cash payout, plus his several million dollar a year retirement and all the other stuff. So just when he left, he walked away with $125 million in his pocket and all the other stuff. And I was there at his actual home, which looked like a resort. The guy had a 40-car garage, and it was full. So the guy has real, real money. And he obviously wasn't going to tell me anything, but we talked a little bit about nothing is the way that it seems. And he was very clear that that's very true, but because of who he was and knowing the truth, he was worth this kind of money, and that's just the way it was. So they know something that makes them worth that much to a corporation. So let's continue this on. If we're right, then Guess 18 is saying BS. BS to what? I don't know. But if we're right that applications are being used to get CUSIP numbers, you know, that's why I looked in Black's Law. What is an instrument? What is an application? Well, if you look at the legal definition of the word instrument, which is something that can be given a CUSIP number and sold, an application actually falls within the confines of that definition. So, could they legally be allowed to put a CUSIP number on an application and sell it? Well, according to the legal definition, the answer to that, believe it or not, is yes. Well, now things start getting real scary, but they also start making some really bizarre sense. All the things that seem really, really stupid that businesses do now make sense. When you go to the store, and they, like Kohl's, I went to Kohl's the other day, and they're like, oh, why don't you fill out this application? We'll give you 15% off. And I'm thinking, first of all, there's no way that that's financially feasible, because even if I was just a normal person and not a ghost in the system, the average person right now couldn't qualify for a credit card. The average person's credit's so bad right now, that's a total waste of time. So the 15% off, you're just losing money. I know you're going to be able to write it off because it's going to be an advertising expense, but it's really not conducive to either one of us. Well, then banks are sending out all these applications when they know most people are not going to be able to qualify for anything right now. Yet they're sending them out more than ever before. Now, if we look at it like every time that you sign an application, because an application falls within the legal guidelines of an instrument, and any instrument can receive a CUSIP number, and anything with a CUSIP number can get a bond, and any bond can be laid to rest for a loan from the government, something really bizarre is starting to make sense, something that never made sense before. So let's just continue this on in this total bizarre world where things are starting to make sense. What if a giant corporation, because the way that the Fed set up corporations, what if a corporation that has a certain amount of employees, and so they're under different guidelines, and they fall under SEC, what if that corporation was to go get its own banking license, which most of them do, which makes no sense. But all of a sudden, it does start to make sense. Because what if they are taking their employment applications, stamping them as an instrument, getting them a CUSIP number, and putting them in as a bond? Well, that starts making sense. if every application out there, whether it be the store where you're trying to just buy a pair of pants and they want you to fill out an application, they'll give you money off to buy or to fill out the application. And what if every mortgage application, every employment application, what if all that is stamped with a CUSIP number? And what if while you're an employee, they took your application and they put a CUSIP number on it, and you're actually paid out of the investment of that application, then you'd legally be required to pay income tax on it, even though you're not a federal employee. And there's all kinds of arguments about, well, you know, Title 26, 7701, 6331A, so you don't have to pay income tax if you're not a federal employee. Yet when people fight that, they lose it. All of a sudden it makes sense. If applications are instruments, and according to Black's Law Dictionary, they are, and any instrument can become a bond, which according to Black's Law Dictionary it can, and any bond can be given a CUSIP number, which according to federal law, the SEC, it can, then if you're an employee of a large corporation and the corporation securitized your employment application and is paying you via that, then you definitely must pay income tax. That would also explain why they want you to do the W-4 and why they refuse to not withhold anything, even though you do the proper legal documents to prevent them to withhold. I think we may have just stumbled across something that makes everything make sense. Now, there's all kinds of these crazy patriots out there with their little psycho babble stuff about, oh, they sell your signature and blah, blah, blah. They can't. You can't sell a signature. But can you sell a document with a signature on it? Well, sure, if it's the kind of document that can be sold. Does that include an application? Well, if you read the definition of instrument and an application falls within the guidelines, the confines of that definition, then definitely you could sell an application. You could at least securitize it. You could at least attach it to a bond, so you can definitely make money off it. All of a sudden, things start making, even the most bizarre of concepts that this country seems to be falling for that just it make no sense in law, make sense. Every bit of it makes sense. Now, I've only been looking at this for a little bit of time over the last 3 or 4 days, and so much makes sense to me now, I think this is it. I think the bastards get us to fill out applications because they know the applications are instruments, regardless of what kind of application, regardless of whether it's for a credit card, for a mortgage, for a deed of trust, for a loan, for employment, to belong to an association. You fill out an application, and if they're the right type of corporation, they can go down there, throw a CUSIP number on it, and make money off that application. And every law that I read, that's allowable under the law. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to have somebody that works in a union shop for a corporation, so the union's behind him, check with his company and see if he can get the CUSIP number for his employment application. I want to see what they say. I want to see if they say that's not possible, if they become argumentative, if they refuse to answer, because their answer, no matter what they tell me, is going to tell me what I need to know. We're going to be asking on all of these cases for a current copy of the application, not a copy of the application, because they'll give you a copy of the original one. I want a current copy. I want to see the application the way it looks now, and I want the CUSIP number for that application. And we're all going to start doing it. Because if we're right, and the QCIP, the application has a QCIP number, it's game over with. Because that is your application, not theirs. That money goes to you, not them. So, I mean, we'll open it up for questions, so, because I'd like for everybody to understand this completely.
But you say it's your application, but it's really their application that you filled out, right? Just like with Social Security, it's their number, but you get it. But
well, it's that's a whole different concept. It's, you know, applying for a Social Security number, so to say, that's a whole different that's a whole different beast. When you fill out an application, if somebody gives you an application, like you go to Taco Bell and get an employment application, do you have to bring that application back?
Yeah.
No, you don't. They give it to you freely. They don't have to bring it. You don't have to bring it back.
Yeah, but if you want the job, you do.
Sure, but I didn't say that. See, people never seem to answer questions. Do you have to bring the application back?
I guess not.
No, you don't. It's yours. They gave it to you. Now, you can sign it, but it's still yours. So is it their instrument or is it your instrument?
If you walk out the door with it, it's yours, I suppose.
And even if you bring it back, it's your signature on it. It's your note. It's your instrument. Just like when you fill out a promissory note, it's your note. They're holding on to it to get... Because you got to buy it back. It's the collateral for the loan. It never really becomes their note. Never becomes their application. See, I think we're missing something. That the concept that Balancing Books is asking, so then the deed of trust is also your instrument then, right? No. See, a deed of trust would be the exact opposite. The deed of trust would be the covenant or the contract, really, depending on how it's written and how you read it, is a contract, it basically becomes something for both parties. And, you know, this thing, your signature creates the money. No, it doesn't. Your signature doesn't do anything. That patriot crap of your signature does something. I can go write my signature on the sidewalk. It's not going to give me any money. No one's going to pay me for it. Signature doesn't do anything. It's a world of documentation and numbers, not of signatures. And the patriot concept, that erroneous concept, it's really insane. It is absolutely insane that the signature has much to do with anything. The signature is nothing more than a verification. It's the document. It's the type of document. We are a world, an economy, financial scenario, if you will, of documentation that are tracked through numbers. And that's all it is. Does a document require to have your signature on it? Normally it does not. Because they can do documentations over the phone and do a telephonic signature, and your signature is really not on it. So, but it's just evidence that you agreed to it. So they can just say that you agreed to it. Your signature's got nothing to do with anything. Matter of fact, most credit card stuff is done electronically now, and you don't ever sign anything. The concept that your signature has anything to do with anything is a facade. People got to stop that. It's basic insanity, and it's just something else that the insane gurus sell to screw everybody over and to drive them nuts. Don't fall for it. It's stupid. It's actually incredibly stupid. So it's documents. Documents are used to give an excuse to create money. Then there's numbers on those documents that are used to track the documents. So... All they want is documents. All the businesses want. You know, we're in the information age, and information is tracked through numbers on documentation. when you read legal briefs, they're organized in what's called a docket, and they all have a number. When you do accounting, the pages are numbered. The accounts are numbered. Everything's numbered, numbered, numbered. You number things to remove humanity. The human factor, that's how you annihilate a human factor, is by numbering. So they just need documents. Now, are most of the documents fraudulent? I would say that a good portion of them are fraudulent. Are a lot of them false? Absolutely. Are a lot of them forged? I would say a good percentage of them are. So, and a signature is not a contract. Babs, 1936, signature is a contract. No, it's not. You don't understand contract law if you'd say that. Most people think they know contract law. Most people think they know law. Either they watch too much television or they listen to stupid people. I don't know. But a signature is not at all a contract. Like I say, I can write my signature on the concrete outside my house. I don't know why anybody would think that would establish a contract with anybody. A contract is an agreement between parties that is most often enumerated or memorialized in a document. The document itself has nothing to do with the contract other than the enumeration and memorialization of something. So when you look at what a contract truly is, it's just an agreement between the parties. We have documents so we all know all the concepts, and nobody's making any guesswork in this. But people think they know this stuff, and they don't. And just like I was describing earlier, my little jaunt through the dam and having an argument with these people on, okay, we're in this dam. You guys stole billions of dollars in tax money to build the dam that produces the electricity, yet you charge me for using the electricity that comes from the dam that you took my money to use to build the dam. This makes no sense. Makes no sense whatsoever. And they looked at me like I was the crazy one. Last night when Randy and Jackie were here and they drove all the way out here just, you know, to have me try and teach them this stuff. One of the things I did was I made a pot of coffee so that we could talk. And I said, okay, here's a perfect example. My coffee pot, my water, my coffee. And I did the work and I made the coffee. Actually, the coffee pot did most of the work. So, but what if you're in charge and now that we used my coffee pot and my water and my coffee, and you get to say, I got to give you $5 for every cup of coffee. Well, would that be right or would that be wrong? And their first concept is that would be wrong. Well, okay. Why? Well, the only basis for that, the reason it would be wrong, is it would, if I was a free man and this was a capitalist country and my stuff is mine. But what if we were in China and that was the master's coffee pot and the master's water and blood, the master owned you, so you were claiming it was your coffee pot and your water and your coffee, and you made your coffee. Could the master still say, you got to pay me for the coffee? Absolutely he could. The average American's presumption that we live in a free society and we're not a communist dictatorship is where they make all the mistakes. They're friggin' nuts. We are definitely a communist country. We are definitely not a free society. We are definitely a police state. If you don't believe that, try telling somebody that works for the government.
California, if you don't believe that.
Yeah. Well, or Arizona. I mean, try and tell somebody who works for government, get the hell off your land and leave you the hell alone. They don't care what the law says. They don't care what the Constitution says. If they want to arrest you, they will. This is a communist country.
Princess, is the economic disparity that exists between black people and white people. For example, we keep hearing about this black middle class. There's no black middle class in America. The word class is a Marxist concept that means ownership of the means of production. So in order for you to be middle class or upper class, you must have some degree of control. Some degree of control. over the industries that make America the capitalist giant that it is. In other words, you control real estate. You control industry. You control airlines. You control shipping lines. You control factories. You control machinery. You produce and distribute. To be a member of a class, middle class or upper class, to be a bourgeoisie, you have to have the ability to control production. Black people don't own any institutions. So how are we going to control production? We can't. So the term black middle class is the biggest lie that's ever been pushed on the black community. If you look at the group that is labeled white middle class, you will see that they do have control over the means of production. A white middle class person does own real estate, does own businesses, does own a multinational corporation. They are majority owners of stock corporations that publicly trade on Wall Street. I'm not talking about minority ownership that black people have. I'm talking about minority ownership. To give you an example of what I mean, Princess, you can take a white person who makes $80,000 a year, upper middle class, and you can take a black person who makes $80,000 a year, upper middle class, supposedly. On the surface, they look like they're equal. But guess what? The black person's $80,000 is in the bank, and that's the only place it's ever going to stay, in the bank. The white person's $80,000 is tied up in investments, real estate, land, industry, multinational corporations, production, and distribution. So even though it looks like they're worth $80,000 and that they're equal to the black person, because their money is tied up into capitalism, okay, just by virtue of that, that $80,000 that the white person has will probably be about $800,000 within 5 years. And that $80,000 that the black person had will be spent up probably on cars, houses, clothes, daycare, and expensive jewelry that they don't need. So there is no equity in America between black people and white people. When we got out of slavery, we owned one half of 1% of all the wealth in this country. When slavery ended, when they passed the 13th Amendment in 1865, approximately 145 years ago, we owned one half of 1% of all the wealth in this country. Here we are. Fast forward to 2011. May 30th, 2011, and guess what? We still only own one half of 1% of all the wealth in this country. The United States was created by rich, white, property-owning men with power and privilege. In order to vote in early America, you had to own land. You had to be a giant of industry or capitalism. You had to be in the position to control cotton, sugar, rum, or any of the other products in this country, timber, and et cetera. There is no power in America without wealth, not a bank account, not cash, not money, not lottery tickets, but wealth. Wealth is that which earns you money even when you're not working. White people are home right now watching TV, but their bank account is steadily growing through the night because it's tied up in investments, investments that black people are not allowed to participate in. Understand this, Princess, and they never talk about this. The reason why black people cannot catch up to white people, and this brings me to economic racism, banking racism, industrial racism. The reason why black people can't catch up to white people is because they don't give us access to the capital that we need to open the industry to be able to compete with theirs. Let me give you an example. You want to open up a big sneaker company. You want to challenge Nike, and you want to challenge Adidas, and you want to challenge Reebok. Well, guess what? If you want to challenge them, you're going to have to put factories in different countries. You would have to come up with a massive multi-million-dollar advertisement campaign. You have to create a distribution network. You got to have planes and you got to have ships. You got to have trucks. You got to have vans so you can fly, float, and mail your sneakers all across the world whenever somebody orders a pair off the internet. So in order for you to be in a position to compete with Nike, you're probably going to need a $50 million loan. There's no bank in America that's going to give you that as a black woman. There's no bank in America that's going to want to give you that as a black woman. Let's say I want to open up a TV station. I want to compete with ABC and NBC and CBS, and I want to compete with Fox. In order for me to do that, I'm going to need a $75 to $100 million loan. I got to get my networks up. I got to get my satellites up. I need a $100 million loan. There's no bank in this country, even if I got A1 credit, who's going to give me that type of money. The reason black people don't catch up to white people is because the banks follow a law that I relate, that I call the zero tolerance law on black economic expansion. The zero tolerance law on black economic expansion. No black person in this country is ever going to get a loan that exceeds $2 million. Why? Because if they never give a black person a loan that exceeds $2 million, they never have to worry about competition with black people. And in the words of John D. Rockefeller, the patriarch of the Rockefeller dynasty, he said himself that competition is a sin. Prince says there is no such thing as a free market. When you turn on the news and they give the economic report, they keep talking about how we live in this great free market where anybody can get rich overnight just by using their brain and using their money and by pulling themselves up by the bootstraps. Princess, that is a lie. Most white people in this country who got money, they got it intergenerationally. They got it through slavery. They got it through white folk who had businesses who may not have gotten that money through slavery, but who had access to what? Capital from the banks so that they can build their economic capital. We don't have that. So when a black child is born, he's born broke. When a white child, he had me put away from great granddad and grandma and mom and pop. It's not that black people don't want to do better, but in order to do better in a so-called free market economy, you got to have access to capital. Now, is there a way around the white banks? Of course there is a way around the white banks, as I wrap this comment up for you. That is for what? Rich white black people. Actually, that was correct. They are rich white black people. But any rich black people, your NBA superstars, NL superstars, to create a black savings and loan association. Create a black savings and loan association. Bill Cosby could sit on the board. Oprah Winfrey could sit on the board. Bob Johnson could sit on the board. Michael Jordan could sit on the board because it's their money that they're loaning out. They review our proposals, and they put forth an initiative where they deliberately seek to get black people access to the capital that they need to compete with white corporations. That is the way out of this. The problem is most rich black people are too afraid to help poor black people because most of them made their careers entertaining white people. In other words, they got rich making white people feel comfortable. Oprah Winfrey got rich making white people feel comfortable. Bill Cosby got rich making white people feel comfortable. Michael Jordan got rich making white people feel comfortable. And because of that, they are too afraid to reach back into the ghetto and pull some of us out with them. Last thing I want to tell you is this, Princess. Another reason why black people are going back to the future. In other words, we look like we're making progress, but we're going backwards. But we can't tell because of our ignorance. One of the reasons why is because black people are content with information, but they are not ready to build institutions. Let me say this again. The black community, the conscious community in particular, has contented itself with information, but they have done nothing to build institutions. I want to be very, very clear about that. When you look at most black organizations, they're talking good information, then elections, good information, presentations, programs, events, good information. I'm not rejecting or criticizing the information. I'm not saying that we should stop collecting information because in this stage of informational warfare, we need as much as we can get. So I want people to be clear. I'm not saying we should stop the pursuit of information. I'm saying that we should stop being content just with having it. We should stop being content just with knowing. I see brothers and sisters who are addicted to what's going on with black people in the music industry. They're addicted to know about Satanism in the music industry. I know brothers and sisters who are addicted to what's going on with black people in Hollywood. I know brothers and sisters who are addicted to the Illuminati. I know brothers and sisters who are addicted to the black boule, misnomer the black bourgeoisie. They are addicted to information. Just like you get addicted to...
Okay, Moore, we're back. We're moving down to real economics, and we're going to deal with the Fed. Yeah, we have 13 minutes left, so we'll deal with a little bit of that, and then we'll be right back, okay?
The Federal Reserve backlash has made the United States a target for currency termination. Following last week's announcement of QE2, China's leading credit agency downgraded the U.S. China's vice finance minister said the U.S. isn't living up to its responsibility as an issuer of a global reserve currency. The Fed's move doesn't take into account the effect of this excessive liquidity on emerging market economies. Brazil's president-elect, the last time there was a competitive devaluation of currencies, it ended up where it did, the Second World War. The finance minister in the Eurozone said, that I don't think it's a good decision. You're fighting debt with more debt. In reaction to global tensions, President Obama stated that the Fed's mandate, my mandate, is to grow our economy. Not only is this not President Obama's constitutional mandate, the Fed has a horrible record of growing an economy. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve, the US dollar has lost 97% of its value. The Fed is now creating so much inflation that as of March of 2008, they stopped officially reporting M3 money supply. The Fed's track record since its creation is bubbles, depressions, recessions, and of course their main purpose, banker bailouts. The Federal Reserve inflates the money supply. Rather than own up to the cost of war and overburdensome entitlements by taxing its citizens, U.S. politicians turn to the Federal Reserve for money produced by nothing, creating a shadow tax on all Americans. Inflation is the worst tax of all, hurting those weakest in our society. The poor and middle class are paid and save exclusively in Federal Reserve banknotes. They feel good with money in the bank because they are told that the nominal amount is protected. Sadly, of course, as the Federal Reserve inflates to help the Treasury meet its unsustainable obligations, the savings held by the poor and middle class lose real value. The cost of living rises, creeping in slowly. The bankers get to spend the freshly created dollars at their maximum value, while the common man works harder but makes less in value. There's an old saying that a dollar earned is a dollar saved, but that's impossible with the Federal Reserve System. With real inflation north of 5%, $1 today will only have a real value of 95 cents the following year. Of course, economists will tell you that prices are rising, but in reality, money is falling.
Congressman, I couldn't agree with you more that inflation is a tax.
40 years ago, a silver dollar could have purchased 4 gallons of gasoline, and today, because of the silver in it, it can still purchase 4 gallons of gasoline. However, the paper dollar currency backed by nothing hasn't fared as well. It now takes $3 to purchase a gallon of gasoline. Again, no one notices the slow death of a fiat currency, but one thing we do know is that they all die. So far in the world, we have seen just over 3,800 fiat currencies, and they have all become worthless. Meanwhile, honest money, gold, silver, or anything not created by man still holds value, just as it held value 5,000 years ago. The Federal Reserve System injects artificial stimulus into the economy every day. The Fed loans money to the banks. The banks loan money to people and governments. This distortion in the marketplace creates businesses, wars, entitlements, and demand that we don't need. Where would housing prices be without all this money in search of a borrower? Housing prices from 1610 to 1913 had zero inflation relative to income. But in the last 10 years, we have seen what artificially low interest rates can do to a market. The Federal Reserve lowered interest rates dramatically, causing housing prices to soar. Housing inflation soared across the nation. Once the Federal Reserve raised rates,
all of the artificial demand came crashing down. By having a small group of people set interest rates for the entire nation, it makes it impossible to allow the free market to set prices. When policyholders talk about interest rates being too high or too low, they're really talking about price fixing. Take a minute to think about interest rates. If the Fed, not the free market, lowers interest rates, homes, vehicles, and credit card payments become cheaper. When things that people want become cheaper, demand goes up. When interest rates go from 20% in 1980 to almost 0% in 2005, debt payments get cheaper, demand goes up, and prices go through the roof. The Fed literally pushes people into making decisions they otherwise would have not. Americans overconsume because money is cheap. It's only a $200 payment for that new car, or a $15 a month payment for those new shoes. Not only does the Fed distort demand, but as a result, it distorts the jobs that are created to meet that demand. Rather than new jobs being created from innovation, jobs are created to meet the new consumer demand created by low debt payments. In fact, oftentimes because of the Fed, new ideas never even become a reality. Remember, when a bank decides to loan money to a risky subprime borrower, the bank is not loaning money to someone else. If the American people want to put power back into their hands and enjoy the fruits of their labor, we must fight to end the Federal Reserve. Right now, the National Inflation Association is projecting hyperinflation in the United States by the year 2015. For more information about how you can prepare and prosper, please visit inflation.us.
Okay, Moses, we back. Moving down to the bottom of the hour. And I want to remind you all that on August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, we will be hosting the Morris Summit. So make sure that y'all come on down and get with us. Be right here in the Wyndham Hotel, okay?
Hey, Moses, going directly into the month of July, for those of you who have problems with your mortgage, you got student loan debt, you got that child support hanging on it, we're going to cancel those contracts. And for those of you who are trying to do that, before you do anything, call me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Now, if you just want the most powerful archives in America, go right there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And give me a call to Hawker Amana L. Bay at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you some aid on that thing, okay? All right.
Okay, Morris, we come to the end of the broadcast, and I want you all to stay tuned. We're going to be coming back with some more information on this, but we're going to be coming out with a new broadcast and dealing with relationships and stuff, so y'all make sure y'all catch that broadcast, and we'll be posting the advertisement up for that. And don't forget, for our free articles, including the one that I told you about, the common law grand jury validated by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's now possible for us to set up these grand juries. Need to get working quick on that and get your international status set up and all that, and we'll show you exactly how to do that. We got everything laid out, and we're steady adding information to the archives for that. And any of the packages that you all decide to donate to on TahakaArchives.org, we are adding the master library to it, okay, no further donation to you. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And until next time, you all have a good evening.